This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
The entire building is crackling with excitement. We've recorded Mulsey the Snowman. We had myself, Bob, and then Greta, Jenna, and Gwyn from the building. And everybody was great. I think Bob stole the show. Would you agree with that?
Bob Solo definitely took the cake. That was incredible. And he just bought into the role, too. He's a master at work.
There were people gathering around the studio here to watch the glass. Yeah. And I was conducting. Did you notice that?
I did, yes.
I was like the great Michael Tilson Thomas, the director of the Buffalo Philharmonic. I mean, I was, I thought I did that really well. The lyrics are unbelievable. I passed it by Mulsey. I didn't want him to be offended in any way. But, you know, he takes shots at me from time to time. It's all good natured. And they're welcome to make a song about me as well.
The morning show made a diss track on the PM team earlier this year.
Right. I mean, it's all fair in love and radio.
It's all in good
fun. So I think it's a wonderful, wonderful rendition of Mulsey the Snowman. And we'll have it for people all packaged up with the background music. We're sending it away to get sort of produced in a way.
Yes.
Right?
$19.99 shipping and handling.
That's what we're going to do here.
It's all like a kids' bop CD.
Yeah, I think you out there are really going to enjoy it. You're part of it. The listeners, one of the lines is about the listeners and their relationship with Mulsey. I think it's wonderful. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at South Hills Kia. Do you want to give them a little taste of it? Just one line or no?
We could. Do you want to give them Bob Solo?
No, that we have to save.
The first line?
Maybe the first verse. Yeah. Maybe the first verse.
All right, I could do that.
This, again, was a five-person Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young.
This was a six-person event. Ben Tenuta kind of chimed in. I chimed in.
Was he actually singing or just filming?
I think he might have just been filming.
No, let's hear the first verse.
Here's the start. Oh,
Mulsey the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul. With a giant bald head and a button nose, his favorite pitcher was Garrett Cole.
And then it only gets better.
Isn't that great?
How about Bob dropping down to sing in harmony there? I mean, that was fabulous. He's a trained singer, and so is Gwyn Gold. You hear her in the background.
I thought it seemed like everybody was a trained singer. You're trained for as much as you sing.
Well, wait till you hear Bob solo. That makes it even better.
And
anywho,
Ben Tenuta has the video, which will go up on our socials at some point very soon.
The fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. The fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And I mentioned fan Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. All right, Limits, you promised me a little trip around the NFL because there's lots of stories and lots of them pertain either directly or indirectly to the Steelers. Let's go.
All right, let's start off with Patrick Mahomes saying just about 10 minutes ago, my hope is that I'm able to go out there and play and that he's made progress on his ankle since Monday. Noting the potential number one seed in the long break is what proves to be a factor for him. It's currently just a race against time.
I'm going to bet, and if I were a betting man, I would bet a lot of money he's not going to play against Houston and that they're going to wait and see what happens with the Bills. And, you know, people think it's crazy that this team could beat that. Come on, it's the NFL. Wait and see what happens with the Bills and the Patriots that Sunday. And then if he feels he needs to play in Pittsburgh, I think he will play in that game because I think that that rest, that gathering point for the Chiefs is so critically important for a team that has played a ridiculous amount of football. I know they're sitting here at 13-1. There's a reason nobody's ever done the three-peat in the NFL. It's just a lot to ask physically, emotionally, to be able to do that. And their best bet is going to be to only have to survive two games at home to get to the Super Bowl. And then, you know, then all bets are off. I think anything else, honestly, for the Chiefs is a bit much to ask. And I think they know that. I think they know it. It's not just the last 2 years of playing more games than anybody else. It's the last five. I mean, when was the last time they weren't in the AFC Championship? I'm sorry, that just takes a massive physical and emotional toll on a team. I would argue especially physical. And when you look at how much they've been through, those bodies, Super Bowl last year, Super Bowl the year before, Conference Championship the year before, Super Bowl Conference Championship, we're going all the way back to 2018. I just don't think it's realistic for them. And I know that, you know, the personnel changes. They got infusions of younger guys here and there. It's just not realistic that they're going to win four straight games, even though they're the Chiefs. It's not. They got to win two in a row and get to the Super Bowl, and they know it. So I think he's out this game. That's what I think. It's the vibe I get, and that he'll play in Pittsburgh if the Bills beat the Patriots.
And Andy Reid saying if Patrick Mahomes can go, then he will go. So you think that this is a different situation for Kansas City than, say, like the Steelers in regards to a George Pickens, a Sean Elliott? If they're on the fence, you think it's different for Mahomes in Kansas City if it was a very similar situation injury-wise? Let's say like everybody's 85%. The Steelers will be better off to rest their guys, but Mahomes should go?
I completely lost track of what you were saying. It was very confusing. What?
So let's say hypothetically that the injuries stay the way that they are, and this is the Steeler game coming up. That would be this Saturday. Pickens, Elliott, you think it's a different situation compared to Mahomes with the Chiefs because the number of games that the Chiefs have played over the last couple of years?
Again, it's very convoluted what you've asked me, and I'm still not following it. But yes, I think it's a different situation. The Steelers don't have a bye at stake. And yes, they haven't played as much football and been through as much over these last years. But a bye would be great for them too, but they ain't getting it. They're going to have to win three to get to the Super Bowl no matter what, probably two of them on the road no matter what. So again, when I consider the Steelers, it's health for the playoffs over home game for me.
All right, next up, the NFL has made a flexing change. The Dolphins and Browns game is now out of Sunday Night Football Week 17. It's being replaced by Falcons and Commanders.
Oh,
talk about
God.
Going from mid to not as mid, but still pretty bad. I mean, does that game intrigue you at all? Falcons,
well,
Commanders? Not to me.
I mean, it could. If both of them need that game to get into the playoffs. I mean, I don't know how the choices work, but it's a better choice than the first one. They've upgraded, but not by much. I would agree with that. Under normal circumstances, if Falcons Commanders were going on right outside the studio, I'd shut the blinds here. but if one or both teams needs to win to get in, then it's always compelling.
I would not be that interested in that game. But yes, if that was the situation, I always think back to that Raiders game against the Chargers. Remember when the Steelers needed like one team to lose, like no tie to happen, and they ended up going down to the last minute. Brandon Staley called a timeout. The Raiders kicked the game-winning field goal, and the Steelers got into the playoffs. So weird things can happen in the final 2 weeks of the year. I know that was the last game of the year, but I digress. Brock Bowers, speaking of the Raiders, he's closing in on Mike Ditka's 63-year record for rookie tight ends. Bowers has been incredible this year. Ditka's record in 1961 was 1,076 yards. Bowers, 968, and a chance with a couple games left to be able to break it. How about that?
Man, a lot of teams, I think, regret that they didn't take him. I think so. Where'd he go? 13th?
Yep.
Right? I mean, what would the Vikings be doing with him right now? You know, how about Atlanta? You think they wouldn't mind having Brock Bowers on their team? Or, I don't know, other teams made the choices they had to make. Maybe Tennessee, maybe the Bears. And it's funny you ask me this right now, because last night I was looking at mock drafts. Tyler Warren needs to go in the top 10. I'm sorry, he just does. He's that good of a football player, and I would take him. Brock Bowers is he's great. I argued that if it got to the Steelers last year at 20 and he was still on the board, I would have snatched him up in a second. He's a star. And so is Tyler Warren. Do you agree?
I would take Tyler Warren if I were the Steelers, and I would basically make him like a glorified wide receiver or move Friermuth with the wide receiver.
I think he'll be gone by then, but if people are stupid enough to let him slip through the draft, you win games. I mean, Brock Bowers, every team in the league would love to have him.
Warren is going to be a dynamic threat. Now, I don't know if he's going to be as good as Bowers. I don't think he will. But, I mean, I would definitely pick him top 15, top 10. I mean, why not? He is probably the best overall weapon of anybody available in the draft outside of Travis Hunter, who is on a planet of his own.
Agreed.
All right, next up. How about this? Aiden Hutchinson saying, I'm on track for the goal of returning for the Super Bowl.
I thought you were going to say for the playoffs. Wasn't that kind of always the plan?
That was always the plan. But he said with his just gruesome injury that he suffered earlier this year with his fibula and tibula that he could be back. Well, at least he's tracking to be back for the Super Bowl. Do you think the Lions at this point will even get there? Because I'm starting to waver on that confidence. I had them winning it all at the start of the year.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know who they are is last year's Bills. Last year's Bills should have gone to the Super Bowl, but they had no defense left for the Chiefs. None. Like they had eight starters out, something like that. You can't win. And if this is going to be the way of it with the Lions, they're not going to win. They're not going to get out of the NFC. They may not even get out of their division. At this rate, if the Vikings beat them in their rematch here, they're going to be a wild card. They've been the most powerful team in the league all year, pretty much. The most consistently powerful team. But you don't win with a second-string defense.
No.
How many guys? Somebody said 20?
Well, it was 13.
And
two
how
more
many guys
just
on
got
their
hurt,
defense?
So now it's 15 on defense.
That's ridiculous. It's just, I'm sorry.
You can't overcome that.
You can't.
Well, and the main injury that I think has really pushed them over the top, because we know how good their offense is, David Montgomery is now expected to be out for the year, one of their star running backs.
That's another one.
That's the big blow to that offense.
It's just, it's too much, man. The season is ridiculously long. It's just hard for every team to survive. It almost feels like who's lucky enough to be healthy at the end, and it sure ain't them.
Speaking about the Falcons game being flexed, after Monday night's bad win last night against the Raiders, the Falcons and Raheem Morris, they're not ruling out benching Kirk Cousins in favor of Michael Penix Jr. Should the Falcons turn to Penix despite giving Kirk, I don't know, $120 million over the next couple of years?
He has been so bad. It's almost indescribable how bad he's been. Yes, they should. They should do anything but let him go out and play again. I don't know what happened to him. I guess the Achilles. But you can't win with that either. I'd at least give the other guy a try and see what it looks like. At least you have somebody running around. Cousins is a statue who also throws tons of picks. That's a bad combo.
That would be a significant, and I mean significant change, though. Like,
yeah, from horrible to bad.
You're changing the entire franchise, I think, with that one move. Like, the entire shift of the locker room, which I know we talk about a decent amount. How much does that really matter? They're not robots. I think that's kind of important. Next up, Derek Carr, according to a report from Pro Football Talk, considered very unlikely to return to the Saints in 2024. To me, this was the most predictable situation with New Orleans trading for Derek Carr. This was just never going to work. They don't have an offensive head coach. Their identity in New Orleans has gotten away from them after Drew Brees left. This is just a franchise in the middle of purgatory, and Derek Carr is not the type of quarterback that can dig you out of it.
Well, I think we have a Steeler-related topic out of this, and that is, excuse me.
God bless you.
If Justin Fields doesn't come back here, what is a situation that would be palatable for both sides? Where could he go? Who would want him, and where might he want to go? And by the way, let's add Russell Wilson to that mix. Limits. This whole idea of Russell Wilson that some people are perpetuating, that he could go out on the open market, like where? Let's just talk about some teams, not Buffalo for either guy, right?
Right.
I don't think Miami, because although Justin Fields.
They paid Tua so much money.
In sort of a morbid kind of way, if you're looking for a place, where could I play? I would consider if I was Fields, maybe. The Jets? Is Rodgers coming back?
Do you want to go to the Jets? Like, is that an organization that you want to hedge your bets on?
I mean, if I'm Fields, I go anywhere where I could start. Wilson's a little different. He can be at least as of now, a little bit more picky. So Fields maybe, but not Russ.
It's probably his last chance if you're Justin Fields to be a starter in the NFL. Do you want to screw it up by playing for the Jets?
New England has their guy, Baltimore, yeah. Cincy, obviously. What about Cleveland?
I would consider it.
For both guys?
Not for Wilson. I would consider it for Fields.
So would I.
I think that system would work well for him. And, I mean, Deshaun Watson is, they're probably just going to try to find an excuse to get rid of him. And a couple more bad games, and they might be looking to turn the page.
I think Justin Fields would actually flourish in Cleveland. You know that?
Flourish?
Yes. On the ground. Like, I don't think he'd turn into Lamar or anything.
No, they would completely change their offense for him.
I think, let's put it this way. If Justin Fields is ever to reach his ceiling, I think a place like Cleveland could be it with that coach, that offense. Houston, no. Indy?
No. You know where I think he could definitely.
Why not Indy?
I don't think they're going to move off Anthony Richardson, even though I think they should.
And if I was Fields, I would be all over that situation.
With Shane Steichen, that's a good situation.
And with a very precarious starter.
I think the most likely outcome for Justin Fields might be what the outcome was for a former Steelers quarterback, and that is to go to Tennessee. Brian Callahan?
Maybe.
That offense?
Maybe. Denver, no. Obviously, KC Chargers. What about the Raiders?
I wouldn't touch the Raiders if I'm a quarterback looking for a choice.
Because some of these teams are also going to choose a quarterback in the first round.
And the Raiders are probably going to take Shedeur Sanders, them or the Giants.
So the moral of this story is there's going to be extremely limited market for either or both Russ and Justin, I would think.
Depending on how many quarterbacks are going to be taken. Sanders,
I mean,
the Giants
are going to take a quarterback. Vikings spoken for, Packers, Bears. There's nowhere to go. The Bucks, maybe the Falcons, if you want to compete with Michael Penix.
They're going to start Penix.
Yeah, if I'm Fields, I wouldn't mind. How do you know how good Penix
is? You're
going
to go to a situation with two guys that are already battling against each other. You're going to be the third wheel in that situation?
I mean, I think I might have a chance there, actually. What about the Saints?
Depending on what coach they hire. Because they need an offensive coach to turn this thing around. That's just a dumpster fire right now in New Orleans. I hate to say it, but
the Saints might be a place for actually either guy.
Yeah. I could see Justin Fields in New Orleans. Probably Wilson, too. Considering they've gone the veteran quarterback route with Carr.
Not that I think that Russ... I don't think Russ is leaving.
I don't either.
Especially if he winds up having a really good season, finishes strong here. I think he likes it here, and he wants to win. And I don't think the Saints would be that place. What about the Panthers?
Bryce Young, baby. I think they're going to run it back.
They've already moved back from Bryce Young.
And he's played well since he's gone back.
No, he hasn't.
He didn't play well last week, but other than that, he's played pretty well.
Not really.
I mean, who does he have to play with? Adam Thielen? Chuba Hubbard's okay.
I'm just saying, if you're trying to size up where to go, Bryce Young, since he came back in the lineup, has 3 touchdowns and 3 picks limits. He stinks.
It's the eye test. It's all about the eye test.
The eye test is even worse.
They've been so much more competitive in games.
Well, good for them. And then there's the NFC West.
It's the little things, the little steps in life for Bryce Young.
What's going on in Seattle?
Geno Smith.
I don't know about that. I don't know how much longer that's going to go. Might be an interesting situation. What about your San Francisco 49ers? I think they signed Purdy long term, don't you?
They might just franchise him at this point and then see how it plays out.
All right. Well, thank you for our trip around the NFL limits. That was wonderful.
Thank you for allowing me.
And I enjoyed it thoroughly. Oh, I know what I wanted to talk to you about. TJ Watt and Defensive Player of the Year. Do you think, let's just say, you know, either he doesn't play at all or he comes back in and has to leave, you know, just is sort of a washout these last 3 games. Is anybody close enough to him in the odds right now to where they would have a realistic chance or no?
That's a good question.
No, it's a great question.
It is absolutely fantastic. And I don't think so. I mean, Pat Surtain is the next closest man, but he's at plus 350. And then the next after that is Will Anderson at plus 1600. That's a huge gap. So I guess Pat Surtain, with the way that Denver's trending right now, possibly. They still have to play Kansas City. And I wonder how that might affect his stock unless he picks off Mahomes a couple times and he's throwing a lot this year. But no, I think that Watt at the moment is probably not the runaway winner, but he's the clear guy, at least according to the markets.
I saw something on Steelers Depot. It's Betonio in Denver. is the guy that's closing in right now. But I still think even if he does almost nothing in these last three games, it's the kind of year where he's going to win it anyway. Like, he's done enough, and there's no other great candidate.
Batonio's had two pick sixes that have changed the course of two Denver games, and that's why.
Yeah.
But no, I would still give it to Watt. And that partly that is because that nobody is having such a huge, outstanding season. I mean, Watt with the forced fumbles is obviously high, and tackles for loss. But, I mean, his sack numbers, he's not approaching Strahan or approaching his own record.
All right. I have a question for you about the game the other day. There's a headline here, again, on Steelers Depot. Gene Steratore says, right call was made on Montrevious Adams. Really focused on getting that cleaned up, apparently, he said. And I read somewhere else where the onus is on the defensive player to avoid the long snapper. How? How was he supposed to avoid him? He got knocked into him. I'm trying to get by the guy to his right, if I'm looking at it from Adams's perspective. Am I not allowed to try to squeeze by on his inside then? On the side toward the long snapper? Because if I do, that guy would be an idiot not to push me into the long snapper.
And that's what happened. It's not like Mo Adams's momentum completely took him into the center. And like that was, don't you have to determine if there is like clear-cut intention on a play like this for there to be a penalty? Like, to me, there was no clear intention that Adams's, whether it was momentum or direction, was to go directly over the center.
I don't understand the rationale behind the rule. How is it different than roughing the punter?
Yeah, the punter was, somebody was blocked into
exactly.
The punter.
It's no different. That's got to be the stupidest rule on the books.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all. And I still can't get over the punches being thrown in the end zone. And all, we didn't see any evidence of it. There was nothing there. Nothing to see here.
Well,
except Calvin Austin, the smallest guy on the field, is the one that gets penalized for it. I mean, with Darnell Washington on 6'7", getting punches basically thrown to his face, what, twice from Slay? And you don't see that?
And then they either lied about it or revealed themselves as completely incompetent with their statement after the game saying no punches were thrown. If I'm the Steelers, and I don't agree with, and this is what we didn't talk about today that I meant to, was Pickens saying the league has a vendetta against the Steelers. Something like that he put out there. Other people complaining. Kabali saying the Steelers players complaining about a lot of the calls in the game.
Porter said that A.J. Brown pushed off multiple times. And
give me a break on that stuff. Seriously. You got your asses kicked in that game. You won't find a more lopsided statistical game between two playoff teams maybe this whole year. Maybe you will one or two.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
401 to 163 in yards, 26 to 10 in first downs, or you could have just watched the game and watched a 10.5-minute drive at the end. I don't know that a team's been more just manhandled than the Steelers were on that drive. And some of it was passing, too. I get that. But I would still include manhandling. The play that set the whole drive in motion, and this was after Joey Porter Jr., who had the nerve after the game to talk about how A.J. Brown pushes off and gets away with it. He was just celebrating a play before that when third down by the goal line, legally, A.J. Brown took him at the line and swatted him like a gnat and was wide open to convert a third down and set that whole thing in motion. So while I do agree that there were some calls that were horrible against the Steelers. And if I got the memo from the league on how there were no punches thrown in that fracas in the end zone, I would be livid if I was Art, Omar, Mike Tomlin, and would immediately send the clip of Darius Slay throwing a blatant punch at Mount Washington. And I would say, what are you doing? Are you lying? Or can your people not see clearly? It's as clear as day. He threw a punch. So I would be livid over that, but I'm not taking it to the extent, certainly not, that the league has a vendetta against the Steelers. That's ludicrous. Or even that a lot of these complaints, did it cost them the game?
No,
I don't think so. Because there were also some calls that went against the Eagles that, and I'll give you two examples. And this one didn't really matter at the end, but it's just an example of, calls go or non-calls for the other team, too. is James Pierre had a blatant hip drop. Like, if you could use that in next year's videotape and then not enforce the rule the whole year like you're doing this year, that was exactly what you're not supposed to do. Blandino went on the broadcast and said that call hasn't been made in the NFL all year. To which I would ask, then why did they go to so much trouble to put it on the books? Why is it in the rule book if you're never going to call it? And by the way, the whole rationale behind putting it into the rule book was that star players were getting severely injured by this. And it almost happened to A.J. Brown, right?
Pretty much. I mean, why would you not call it one time this year?
And now I see where Pierre's going to get fined for it. So he got away with that. And then what was the other one I was thinking of with the Eagles? That was a crow. They hit on Justin Fields by Blankenship. And Brady's been all over this. Like, what are you supposed to do? It reminds me of some of the head hits in the NHL where guys crouch at the last second. Like, you're going in for a normal hit, a midsection hit, maybe up toward the shoulder or chest, and a guy ducks at the last minute. To me, that's not on you.
Yeah.
Blankenship went to make a normal tackle on a guy who was upright, and the guy dipped at the last second. What are you supposed to do?
By the letter of the law, that's a penalty, though, so I didn't have that big of a problem with it. Yeah, by the letter of the law, that's a penalty.
Why?
I mean, you just can't hit him in the head or neck area. And I don't like the rule because part of it
First of all, you can hit a runner. He's a running back at that point.
Your running backs also weren't sliding.
Right. So the question, any slide? So if you're on me, if you're 1 inch away from me and I suddenly duck and I'm a quarterback into my slide, that's still a penalty? It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be. But it is, especially depending on where the forcible contact is. I mean, that's why they keep making it harder and harder to play defense. I don't think that's unrealistic to say.
That's a horrible rule. And I don't even think you're right about that necessarily. I don't think it's automatic if you slide late and somebody hits you up there that they have to call it. If you slide late, then that's on you. You have to slide in time.
I don't understand why players don't forward just dive a little bit. You know, like, we've seen it from Russell Wilson a couple of times. I would just fall forward. Joe Burrow does it a bunch.
Well, why? They're winning that battle. The late slide is working. You might get injured like he did, but it's working. And then Mahomes pulls that crap on the sidelines.
Yeah,
and he did that in maybe his second year in the league or so in the playoff game against Tennessee, where he's going down the sidelines and he starts to veer out and then he quickly cuts back in.
He's on a fake slide as well earlier this year. I would just, and I think just because I don't like the slide rule of where the ball is placed as well when you start your slide, I would just dive forward. I mean, is it that much more player safety-ish, like against player safety? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's a stupid part of the rule, too. Who was it for Pitt last year that did that?
Was it Yarnell, like a yard beforehand, and they had to go for it on fourth?
Yeah, which game was that?
I can't remember.
That was an all-time pitting.
Yeah.
Was that the game where the other team had the backup quarterback with the mustache? Remember that game last year?
It might have been.
I thought you were more of a Pitt follower than this.
Limit. Yes, but it's all run together.
Remember that?
It was a 3-9 year. It was kind of forgettable.
It was wide open. All the guy had to do was get the first down. And it was kind of like Justin Fields.
Are you confusing it with Justin Fields?
A couple of games ago. Exactly. All right, let's take a look at the schedule this weekend, if you would indulge me here. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge. Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. And What's Cooking, brought to you by your local Geico rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
Very kindly. All right, here we go into week 16. Let's take a little look around the league. The Thursday matchup is mighty enticing. Denver at the Chargers. And I must say, there's nobody in football, I don't care who you name, that is surprising me more than the Broncos. When the Steelers left Denver, I thought they left the Broncos for dead. I was laughing and mocking Sean Payton. I thought Bo Nix was Bo Pix at the time. Remember, he had no touchdowns. Only interceptions. He stunk. They stunk. Peyton stunk. I thought they were like a 2-15 team. That's how bad they were. I'm stunned that they're sitting here at 9-5.
I'm surprised, but I mean, the roster that they have, their defense is still pretty good. You would imagine that Sean Payton would sometime figure it out. But yeah, the way that the Steelers left Bo Nix was seeing ghosts. I mean, he wasn't really turning the ball over that much like he has in the last couple of games, but I mean, it just kind of shows that the first initial judgment, sometimes you need a feeling out period in the NFL, and that's what all that Bo Nix needed.
And you know what? He's turning into a borderline star is what he is. He is really good, and Peyton picked it right there. And you know who's turning into less than that? You know who might be, I won't say he's on the Trevor Lawrence plan, but who I thought was a lot better than he is?
Jaden Daniels?
No. Justin Herbert.
No. Don't put Justin Herbert in that category.
What category?
Justin Herbert has no weapons now to throw to after Lab McConkey.
Oh, give me a break with the weapons.
No weapons. None. And his best back is hurt. Dobbins. He has nothing on offense.
You know, people rip Lamar to shreds for what he's done. When's Justin Herbert going to deliver a big win? Ever?
Well, he's finally got the coach.
Ever?
At least they're in a playoff position right now.
Because he's in year 1, 2, 3. He's in year 5. And nothing so far, and it's not going to be anything this year because they're starting to fall apart right now. A 13-point game, or 17 against the Bucs, 17 against Kansas City, 17 against Atlanta. They stink right now. They've lost 3 of 4. I think he's overrated myself. You disagree?
I disagree. Limits. I'm a big Justin Herbert supporter. I think he's the top 5 arm talent. Yes.
You're wrong. I'm right. Have a good night.
Good night.
Fan weather. Brought to you by Sun Chevy, 0% financing on all 2024 Chevrolet EV models up to 60 months through January 3rd with credit through GM Financial. High of 57 today with sunny skies. Good night, Limits.
Good night, Joe.